welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. I'm AD Packham, and we are in your ears with the help of OldFootballShirts.com. Well, a cursory glance at the table ahead of this weekend's fixtures reveals that the Albion are in 8th place after our 2-0 victory over Norwich at a windswept Amex last Saturday. That leads us 2 places and 2 points ahead of this weekend's opponents, Manchester United. We've never won at Old Trafford. This would be a very good time to start. Joining me today is, of course, Alan Wares, and we're delighted to welcome back Bradley Stratton, and we will also hear from former Albion and Man United striker Andy Ritchie, as well as Albion women's boss Hope Powell and Fliss-Givens ahead of their game at the Amex next week. We've got to say thanks to everyone who's liked, commented and shared our show with Tony Bloom last week. It was really good fun.
Well, he was great fun. It was a lovely host. It's our most listened to show of the past 2 years, certainly, since we started counting them. I ran out of fingers and toes by the time we got the numbers there. But, a lovely... And the podcast is still available and will be ad infinitum. And it just shows what a humble, easygoing, sensible, heart and head in perfect balance chairman he is.
No.
I mean, how can you be a chairman with that much passion and still actually have the club run well?
Yeah, Bradley, welcome back.
Thank you very much.
You've obviously listened to the show with Tony. What did you think of our wonderful chairman?
You know,
it was wonderful.
Honestly, there's only so many words you can even think, you know, for what Tony's done for the club. And I thought it was a really interesting chat. A lot of things that, you know, I think fans wouldn't have heard. I think something specifically, just his thoughts on his thinking behind the signing of Sammy Hippier as manager. That was really interesting. Talking about the, obviously, I don't think we knew about the hotel being shelved. I thought that was
okay.
I know it's a small detail, but it was still
absolutely.
Like, because you didn't know if that was still like.
Don't get too much away. We want people to listen to this still.
Oh, yeah.
Spoilers. Sorry. Yeah, I'll leave it. But no, it was a really good chat. And I'd say if anyone who hasn't had a chance to listen to it, definitely go.
Switch this one off and listen to that one instead.
Yeah, but Bradley, there was a lot of talk of the infrastructure and the way the club's been set up from top to bottom. We're going to Man United this week, a club who appeared not to have a plan at all. it's bizarre, isn't it? We're going to this game, and you know,
first time ever ahead of Manchester United.
Yep.
First time we've played them being ahead of them. They are only one of 6 clubs that we've never finished above in the league ever. So
wow. It just doesn't compute. But I mean, the fact that they've completely stagnated, it's just ridiculous to the level.
Yeah, but you look at the level from which they're stagnating, which is still stratospheres above us.
Yeah.
In terms of comparative, our club is run from the basis that it is. And don't forget, it was very much a bottom-up club. It's very much a community club. You can't really say that to the same extent about Manchester United. I mean, it's a global, international, let's say it, brand. So you've got a person with a focus, with a plan. He is a man with a plan. I think also Tony is intelligent enough to know what he doesn't know. And that's
and
where Paul Barber
people.
And get the right people in. And that's where you need someone like Paul Barber and Dan Ashworth. And let's face it, for the most part, a succession of team managers who have progressed the club over the past 10 years. I mean, certainly, Tony, in terms of picking managers, is certainly in the credit.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what, let's find out from a man who's got a foot in both camps, and that's Andy Ritchie, who, of course, played for the Albion and for Manchester United, and I caught up with him a little bit earlier on today. Andy Ritchie, you are the second highest goal scorer for the Albion in the top flight. Did you know that?
I did not know that. No.
So you're currently on 28 goals.
That, yeah.
Yeah, you're currently on 28 yeah. goals. There's only one person ahead of you. Do you know who that is?
Is that might be Glenn Murray, is it?
No, it is not.
No. Oh, right. Michael Robinson.
Yes, it is. Yes, it
right.
is. Glenn Murray.
Right,
Glenn Murray's on 25, so he's nearly caught you up. Right. But you're second on the all-time list. But Andy, thanks for joining us here on the Albion Roar.
Yeah, pleasure.
We're going to talk to you a little bit about your career at the Albion and obviously your time at United as well. But I just wanted to talk to you about how you ended up here, because when I was looking into you, I didn't actually know that. I mean, you played 33 games for United, scoring 13 goals, including 2 hat-tricks. How the hell do they let you go?
Well, a lot of people ask me that question, Eddie. You know, I think it's just one of those things, isn't it? You know, I think it's happened to quite a few players. Managers just feel as though they need or want something different in the team that I didn't offer. I thought I offered goals. Maybe I didn't offer other parts of the game that Dave Sexton wanted. And I'd had talks with Aston Villa. I spoke to Chelsea and I spoke to Newcastle. And when Brighton came along, I loved the club and everything. And I probably then took the hint that I wasn't wanted at Man United.
Yeah, because you were part of a sort of love triangle, really, weren't you? I mean, it was...
I'm not so sure about the love.
it was a transfer that came in 3 ways. So Gary Birtles went from Forest to Man United. Wardy went from Brighton to Forest. And you came from United to Brighton. Now, I mean, replacing Peter Ward for anyone is going to be massive. I mean, even now, his name is still sung on the terraces, and that, like, 40-odd years later. And it's like, did you feel any pressure coming in to replace him?
You know what? I didn't really think about it. It was just one of those things that I wasn't really that much aware of that triangle until I'd signed and just got on with it, really. And again, not being disrespectful to Wardy, because we became massive friends when he returned to the football club. I didn't really know that he had that hero status at Brighton. And that's not being disrespectful. It was just that I was in my own bubble at United and thought, right, I need to play football. I'm going to get the chance. I'm going to be playing first team because back then it was only one substitute. So if you weren't substitute for the first team, you were playing in the reserves again. And I was finding myself, you know, repetitively doing that. And I needed to be playing first team football. That's what my goal was. That's what Alan Mullery said that would be happening. And I loved the place. I loved him. And within sort of 3 hours of being there, I virtually knew everybody in the football club. That's what the place was like.
Yeah, I mean, Brighton does have that kind of genteel feel about it back then, and it was very much a provincial football club, but a club that with a chairman in Mike Bamba that was desperate to go places.
Yeah, but I think now, you know, you wouldn't get that feeling now because you come in and football clubs have gone bigger and much wider, and they've got more departments. And, you know, I mean, basically what it was the football side, the kit man, the offices, which was just one small office with every different department, 3 or 4 departments in there, and the laundry, and that was it. You know, so by the time I'd sort of walked around and been shown around the club and up where we were training and what have you, which was up at the dog track, it seemed as though I knew everybody.
but you were signed by Alan Mullery, and it was for a massive transfer fee for us, and it was 500 grand, that was October 1980, and that was our most expensive signing. I mean, technically, it was Bobby Zamora in 2001, although that was an add-on that took it over that figure. But it was. Will Buckley was the player that we signed in 2011 for £1 million. That was the one player that beat you. I mean, just to put that into context, we signed Glenn Murray in 2008 for £300,000.
Right. Yeah. Amazing. Amazing. So yeah, it was. I mean, it was a massive fee. Again, people ask me about that. Did that bother you? And again, it didn't. You know, I'm sort of pretty laid back. Tried not to let anything like that affect me, and hopefully it didn't. You know, I've had moves throughout my career, not as many as probably a lot of people, but you just got to try and get on with it, you know. And it just felt right. The manager sold the club to me. I liked him. I liked the look of the squad, you know, with the players that were there. And they made me feel welcome as soon as I was there, really. And I thought it was a great move for me.
Yeah, well, the question that we like to ask people in the Raw quite a lot. I mean, you made your debut. Can you remember much about it?
Not much.
It was the 22nd of October 1980. It was at Villa Park. Can you remember what the team was at all?
I think goalkeeper would have been Graham Moseley, maybe.
Yes, it was.
Yeah. Centre-backs could have been Steve Foster and maybe Mark Lawrenson.
Yes, it was.
I'm not doing too bad.
Keep going.
Gary Stevens might have been in there.
Yes, he was.
Yeah. Midfield. Oh, God. Now you're asking me. Neil McNabb?
No,
Neil wasn't there then. I can see the players, but can't bring the names to them.
I'll tell you what the team was. Because I was looking at this earlier, but I was just trying to work out exactly what the hell the formation would have been, because it's like, I think it was 4-3-3, but looking at it, it was Graham Moseley, John Gregory, Andy Williams, Brian Horton, Steve Foster, Mark Lawrenson, Gary Stevens, Andy Ritchie. Funny fella here.
Yeah.
Michael Robinson, Gordon Smith, and Ray McHale. And the sub was Peter O'Sullivan.
Right, yeah.
But, I mean, look at that. That is one hell of a team.
Yeah, great team. When I do Q&A and stuff like that, I say about we were a fantastic team of individuals, but they put us together, we were rubbish. for quite a few seasons, we were battling, for three seasons, basically, that was there. We were battling relegation, and there was one season we had a fantastic season where I think we were in about the top six for virtually all the way through.
There was a change of manager, though, for that. There was a change of manager. Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, Alan Mullery was there. He went, and Mike Bailey came in, and that was our most successful ever season. Even now, and you're saying there that, I mean, we got as high as fifth at one point in that season. So Mike Bailey, he gets a bad press here. It was dull football. The attendances were falling, but you loved it.
I think what was the biggest thing that got us where we were that season was that I think everybody liked Mike and John Collins, the two of them together. They made everything happy around the place. I think that Alan had fallen out with a few of the players, and I think it was a happy time because everybody liked the training. It was a happy place to be, wanting to go in and work as hard as you can. And we just settled into the way he wanted us to play. And I think it suited the players that we had.
I mean, do you think it was, I mean, obviously, I mean, particularly with Mike Bamba, he was looking at the balance sheet and he was seeing the attendances falling. But do you think it was very much a case of careful what you wish for? Because it's like, obviously, when Bailey went, we fell off a cliff.
Yeah, I think that you've got to sometimes just think about the bigger picture, and maybe that wasn't looked at the way it should have been. And yes, I mean, I sort of was in that free fall, but left during that free fall, and obviously after the FA Cup, I left after the quarter final against Norwich. The Brighton thing then just roller coasted away from the FA Cup final, which should have ended up winning with Gordon. Yeah. You know, I don't want to bring that back to him, but Smudger should have probably put it to bed right at the end. Was it a good save or was it a bad miss? I think a bit of both.
We've had Gordon on the show. We've asked him. Yeah, what do you think he says?
What did he say?
Gordon, well, basically, he's saying it's a good save, clearly.
Oh, right. Yeah, well, he would, Smudger. Yeah, he would. I think, you know, it's just one of those things that then it, we've seen it with so many teams. One of my ex-teams, Oldham, you're up there and then all of a sudden things conspire against you and money's tight and you're not getting the same crowds in there and you seem to sort of drop to the abyss a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, and Oldham's a club, of course, which you serve so well, going on to manage them as well.
Yeah, I mean, I was very pleased that towards the end of my football career, which I never had really thought about, there was a player that I played with at Oldham called Andy Holden, who was very much thinking, I want to be a coach and I want to do this and this and that. And I used to get on really well with him. And he said, listen, I'm going to do my full badge. Do you fancy coming down to do it with me? And I said, yeah, don't mind that. So we went and did our prelim, got through that, thankfully. And then we both applied for the full badge down at Lillishaw with Frankie Bunn. And the three of us went down and did it. And it was the best thing for me that I could have done, really. And managed to get back into management there. After Graham Sharp had got the manager's job, I'd put my head, my hat in for the job then, didn't get it. And I think it was probably the best thing that happened to me because I would have had to have changed overnight. And I had so many friends in the dressing room then, I would have had to be a different person. Mm. And that helped me. I was lucky that I didn't get it. Even though I was disappointed at the time, I was lucky that I didn't get it because it gave me time to assess things and become a different person by the time I did become manager, which was after being assistant to Neil Warnock.
Yeah. I mean, your managerial career, I mean, it wasn't a disaster, was it? I mean, you did it right.
Yeah, I was quite pleased. Yeah, got a promotion with Barnsley to the Division One, as it was. Or championship, as they call it. And I've got to say, I was lucky I got a promotion as a player with Oldham, but the promotion as a manager just tipped it because I think that the players were taking on board what we wanted to do, me and my staff, what we saw as a vision for getting to where we wanted to be. And that, in the end, turned out to be the right decision, and we got there in the playoffs, beat Swansea at the Millennium Stadium, and it was just a fantastic day. And I think it just pipped getting promotion as a player.
Okay, well, let's talk about what you're doing now. You're working at Man United. You're as one of the hospitality hosts.
Well, match day legends were called.
I mean, it's great. You played 33 games and you're called a legend. How about that?
Yeah, I know. No. I think I might be just a leg end, I'm very, very privileged to do it because, as you say, it was a long, long time ago I was there. And like I say, you know, all in all, I think with substitute appearances, 42 games. So, I really do enjoy what I'm doing. I'm in a lounge called the Ambassador's Suite.
Okay, so obviously you get to watch United a lot. Now, we're going into this game this weekend. Albion are in eighth position with 2 points and 2 places above United. How's that happened?
Yeah. I think at the moment, Manchester United, as we've seen with a lot of teams, you know, Liverpool, Man City, I think Arsenal maybe as well now going into a little bit of a transition period. Tottenham have been in the sort of the doldrums for a long time. I think we are in that sort of, that's just the way we are. We're 2 steps forward, 1 back at the minute. We had a good result last night, which was, a good thing, I think, for us going into the game at the weekend against Brighton. Obviously, we didn't do so well the other week down at Bournemouth, which, was a step backwards after 3 away wins. I think the vision for the football club is that we want to get that Manchester United ethos and feeling back to all the players. And I think we're going to have to maybe educate from a younger breed of players than maybe bringing people in who maybe just don't get that at the moment. And I think the you know, football clubs back in Holly, and there's going to be a little bit of pain to get the gain, if you like.
Yeah, there is, because, I mean, obviously from the outside looking in, we see a side of the stature of Manchester United, and we're seeing that we were lucky enough to go up to London to interview Tony Bloom this week, and we're seeing that there's very, very much a plan for the club going forward. And from the top to the bottom, through to the infrastructure, from the coaching to the youth to everything, really. And you look at a club like Man United, and you're not seeing anything like that. You're seeing, and the one person that seems to get a lot of the stick from this isn't the manager, but it's Ed Woodward.
Yeah, I mean, excuse me, I only met Ed, you know, once, because I don't get to see. You know, all I do is like go to the game, and I'm the person who sort of meets and greets and stuff like that, along with a couple of other people in the suite with me. Don't get to see the hierarchy at all. Just get to watch the games, do my bit, which is great. Get a nice little meal, and that's what I do. But. Yeah. You know, I work a lot for MUTV, obviously, do quite a lot for them. And basically that is talking about the football club and doing co-coms for the away games. Yeah. I do quite a lot of them. So, yeah, it's a vision for the club that everybody has seen, that this is what we want, that they want to do. This is where they want to go with it. And it's going to be, I think, quite a long process.
Okay. So, what have you made of your old club this season? Brighton.
Well, I mean, at home, as always, I think they're very, very good at home. You know, and the crowd at the new stadium is that they are brilliant, as they were at the Goldstone when, you know, when we used to play there and we'd play against the big teams, and we'd get 17,000 there and it'd be packed out. They were awesome. And I think they are at home, and I think they respond to that. But away from home, they haven't been that great. And I think they've lost the last two away. I think one was against Chelsea, was it? And
basically it was the old adage, basically. The game we lost away at Aston Villa, we went down to 10 men early on. We absolutely battered them, and you know the thing, we'll play better than that, we'll play worse than that and lose, which we did against in the next home game, and against Everton, and we weren't great, but against Villa we were brilliant, and the performances away from home are there, but not necessarily the results. And we're hoping that's all going to change this weekend, because we think Man United are there for the taking.
Well, listen, it's a massive game for both teams, isn't it? Because United obviously want to go further up and get closer to that top six, and so will Brighton. But you know, there's one or two doubts. I know Scott McTominay might be out for us, and also there's Harry Maguire. Had a little bit of an injury knock the other night. Ashley Young suspended. But I think you're getting your midfield player back. He scored, didn't he, against Norwich, Trossard. Will he start this weekend? Maybe, I think so. But it's going to be a big, big game. And I know that the manager has said that he would love to come and take the scalp of Manchester United, one of the best places in world football to play against, you know, a big team.
Okay, we are running out of time, Andy. So just before we go, man, which one of your former Brighton teammates do you think would set the Premier League alight now?
Wow, that's a tough one. I think I've got to say that it'd have to be Mark Lawrenson. I think he's one of the best players that I've ever played with. I know I wasn't there with him a long time because he moved on, but he could play anywhere, absolutely anywhere, and not a master of all trades. You know, that was never him. He could play wherever you wanted him, apart from maybe goalkeeper, and he'd probably be bloody good at that. But Mark Lawrenson, I've always said, was one of the best players I have ever put, you know, stepped on a football pitch with, and I think that he'd be worth millions today.
Yeah. Okay, with that, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much, Andy Ritchie.
Well, I hope he doesn't get too many splinters out of his backside sitting on the fence there.
Well, he's employed by the club. He can't really say too much
about it. It was
lovely to hear from him and some great insight there as well. But you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and, of course, on our podcast. We are delighted to be brought to you in association with the magnificent oldfootballshirts.com. Happy birthday, Phil. And we do have a show.
62, isn't he?
Oh, something like that.
Something like that.
You know, and this shirt, you know what? I
hand it to Bradley. Let him.
The part I dread.
Describe that. Where do you start?
So, the main colour base, it's a red shirt with a, what I would describe as a, it's a kind of leafy pattern, yellow leaves. It's the kind of thing you expect to see maybe on an
Indian restaurant's wall.
Yeah, that
or very psychedelic.
I'm thinking not or maybe a pair of curtains. Yeah. Almost. Yeah. Yeah.
Very
1970s, no. Almost yellow submarine sort of thing.
It's like Melchester Rovers colours, but in kind of a weird
and also the light that we've got in this studio, it's actually quite painful on the eyes.
Do you want to hazard any guess to who it might be?
The badge, the only details there is the year 1873, and it's almost like a clock tower spire. The kit maker's ace, not one I've heard of before.
Yeah, nice. And we've got the sponsor is Maypie, which I'm guessing is Far Eastern. I'm going to pick someone from Southeast Asia. Apart from that, not a clue.
That would be absolutely incorrect, Alan.
And wow. You love saying that, don't you?
And here is your shirt of the week. This is the 2017 to 2018 goalkeeper shirt of Beth Victor Southern League Division 1 Central side, Hales Owen Town. They are known as the Yelps, and they play at the 3,105 capacity Grove Stadium, where they have played since they were formed in 1873. This shirt was designed by their then goalkeeper, Daniel Platt, and he moved to Hednesford Town at the start of the season and promptly left them last week. They won the FA Vars 2 years running between 1984 and 1986, and the money won from these successes allowed them to level their famously sloping pitch, which in turn allowed them to gain promotion to the Southern League, something they'd been denied on several occasions previously due to that horrendous incline of their playing surface.
Right, you are.
A notable former player is Troy Deeney, who made 10 appearances, scoring 8 times whilst on loan from Watford in 2006. And an Albion link I have for form-based, bright-based pie enthusiasts, Jermaine Jesus Kemi Agustin, made precisely 2 appearances for the Yelts in 2018 before moving on to Barrow. So there you go. That is your shirt.
I hate it. I think Phil cheats when he chooses a shirt that's a goalkeeper shirt because he is. It's cheating. I mean, happy birthday, mate. But that, you know, and it's short sleeve. And
I was going to say, yeah.
Goalkeepers' shirts in Hales Owen should not be short sleeved.
Well, it was designed by the goalkeeper himself, so, you know.
Well, I know.
There is a story of it which goes along with that, which I'm sure Phil will post alongside.
We know the goalkeepers are batty, but even
so. Right, OK, well, we need to move on, and let's talk about this last weekend then. And
we're in eighth.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
And it was our third home win in the row, unchanged as well from the side that beat Everton. So Leandro Trossard and Aaron Moy were on the bench.
For all the times that we keep saying, can you try and choose a Graham Potter side, to actually have it unchanged and largely the same setup was almost, I won't say a breath of fresh air, but then we struggled against Everton. And I think we huffed and puffed a little bit against Norwich.
Well, good analogies there, Al, because I was actually surprised that the game was actually even on. We arrived at the game and we were greeted by the sight of poor old Peter Ward. He'd lost his legs.
Well, yes, the big print that's on the North Stand edifice. Obviously, the stadium's been designed to withstand certainly stronger winds than that. I mean, 60-mile-an-hour gusts, so it's not a constant thing. Once you're in the stadium, you can hear it, but you couldn't feel it.
Yeah, one telltale sign, of course, as well, was the flag that only 2 of the flags were moving.
Well, exactly. Exactly. So once you're in that, and again, it's the nature of stadium design. I'm sure you've got people who talk about air movements. And if we ever had the architects here, You know, we'd actually bamboozled by the fact you can quantify air movement. So let's not even go down that route. So no. The only thing that would have made it slightly iffy is if there was any flying debris, and that makes it dangerous for people getting to and from the ground. I mean, it's like when it's snowing and icy, the pitch will be almost certainly fine. It's getting to and from the ground, and that's when you're going to consider. So it was on. So, Bradley, did you enjoy it?
Took its time, but, you know, similar to the Everton game, it took its time to get going, really. Like I say, the similar weather conditions as well, which I thought were a big part of that Everton performance, where that maybe that affected things. But obviously, again, it was those changes in the second half that made a difference, which is why I was a little surprised that, I think we were talking about it on the Facebook Live we did, that we thought Trossard should start against Norwich after that Everton performance. So I was surprised to not see him in that starting lineup.
I think he's being managed though, Al. I mean, I think he is fully fit, and there is a theory that if you're on the bench, you should be fit to play 90 minutes. But I think he's being eased back in.
I think there's that, and there is also the whole point of whether Mopai and Connolly, who are match fit and who are playing pretty well, whether they can actually work together. So at the moment, I think the shirt belongs, certainly for those two games, the shirt belongs to Mopai and Connolly. Is Trossard 90 minutes fit? Do you start him and give him 70 minutes? You know, who knows? But yeah, you're quite right. I mean, and again, Graham Potter, his team will know during training what they can and can't see from a given player. They were evidently happy with the way that Mopai and Connolly were playing against Everton. So, you know, and it's great. 20 minutes in, you know, from the end of the game, mix it up a bit, absolutely.
Now, Brett, I mean, the weather was always going to be a bit of a leveller, because it was going to be swirling and it was going to be tricky conditions.
But, is that what you blame for Neil Marpai's shooting?
Yeah, I know you will never write about that. I'm just going to completely ignore you. But Norwich very nearly did open the scoring. Steeperman's clever finish, just leaving Matty Ryan all ends up, basically, and it would have been a wonderful goal.
It certainly would. I mean, you know, the time that would have come in the first half as well, you don't know how much that could have changed the game at that point. You know, he found that little bit of space, floating it there, and just, it was, unlucky, not for us, I guess, but for them, that it came off the side of the crossbar that it did. Yeah.
There was a sort of an element of, I don't know, Mad World or Police Academy or something like that. For me, in my mind, that ball seemed to, you could see it floated, you could see what it was trying to do. Matty Ryan was in no man's land, and the ball just came down and everyone was waiting, is that going to drop in? And it hit the bar, but it seemed to take forever.
Yeah. It did, but okay. Well, I mean, I know you were particularly unhappy with Neil Maupai's finishing, but I don't want to talk about that. What I do want to talk about is the fact that we did create a lot of chances in this game, and a lot of them fell to Stephen Elzaty, who did a lot of the hard work creating them himself. But if only he could finish.
I think you've got to say about all of them, frankly.
I feel like so many of them, it was almost like every shot they had was, it was like there was a magnet between them and Tim Krul, where every time it just seemed to, everything they were putting towards goal was going towards him. Or like I say, there was the scuff shot from Maupai. Just, it's as great as it has been to see how we've played this season. It fits into the how many chances in another game we have those amount of chances and we lose and we don't deserve to lose.
Yeah.
And so it's always a frustration, but. Yeah.
I mean, I know I said after the game, because we were chatting obviously after the game, and I was sort of scratching my head about the Mopai miss near the end of the first half. I mean, it makes it sound as I'm picking on him and him alone, and I'm not. I thought that Mopai's approach play was absolutely fantastic. I thought Connolly's approach play, that fella with his back to goal cannot be shifted off the ball. I see him as a better player than Glenn Murray doing that, because Glenn Murray is for me still. I'm talking about Connolly. Yeah, sorry. Murray is still looking to go down too much. He's still looking for that free kick. Admittedly, he's been the one who has been playing up front on his own with no support. When Connolly gets the ball, he's got someone near him. He can offload it. But even then, he still keeps it. His control is so much better. His offload is so much better. You mentioned Elzaty. His approach play was superb. Each and every one of them, their finishing was woeful against Norwich.
But he's getting himself into those positions.
Absolutely. But you just think, I think just everyone has admitted it. Everyone said it. How good were we? but for the finishing. And the finishing is probably the most important part of it.
Mm. Agreed.
Okay. Now, one person's afternoon was ended very, very early, and that was, of course, Adam Webster, who crumpled into a heap on the floor under no challenge whatsoever.
Was that the case, Bradley? I mean, so it looked like there was, there was sort of an attack coming from Norwich. I think it was Dunk in front of him was the one jostling with the defender.
His feet got stuck on the turf, that's it, pretty much.
And just.
Was it? Yeah, studs in the turf and his ankle went over.
But a chance of redemption for Shane Duffy.
Certainly is. I mean,
it's like he's never been away.
Oh, yeah. No, he slotted in very well. And, you know, it was hot. You know, but Webster was always going to get the chance after being one of the bigger summer signings. But it was great to see. It was sad to see him go down as he did. But it's always good to see Shane back in and getting the chance to...
It's kind of indicative of the strength and depth that we do have. Let's face it, you've got, you know, Duffy and Dunk, you know, the world beaters and what have you. And let's face it, at the beginning of the season, no one actually thought that anything was going to shift them, even if we were going to play in a back five.
Yep.
And Duffy is probably correctly assumed by a lot of people who's going to be the one that's made way. I think I would have actually said, irrespective of Webster's injury, I think that he might have been actually looking over his shoulder at Duffy coming back anyway, because there's a couple of times I'm thinking you could have actually defended that a little bit better.
Yeah, I mean, he's been in the side. I mean, his marauding runs forward have been
they're
quite
great. On the ball, fantastic,
but
absolutely.
Defensively, he has made a couple of errors. But, yeah. I mean, fortunately for him, the injury isn't that bad. We're looking at, like, 3 to 4 weeks. Obviously, we've got an international break in there as well. So hopefully we'll wish him well anyway. The other side of the break. Now, just before we move on from the first half, there was a goalmail scramble at the end of that half. And it saw Morpie and Connolly completely fluff their lines. And
again,
before the ref blows his whistle for an infringement. And then we all look to the big screens and we see this thing. VAR checking red card. Did you see anything?
Not initially, no. It was so much going on. It was hard to tell what there was. It wasn't until afterwards and seeing some of the clips where Morpie's... during the scramble, he's gone and collided with a defender. But again, it's...
Then when you're in the stadium, checking for red card, and you think, because our fans have no idea, their fans have no idea. Yeah. It's a ridiculous thing that this is the first time. Because when you're checking for a goal, you're checking for offside, it's obvious. Or even if you're checking for an incident where someone's clattered someone, is it a red card offence? Fine, you know what's going on. Yeah. This was a scramble. No idea what's going on. And we're back to the original argument that we've had. No one has a clue.
Yeah.
There's always bits and pieces where you do. You think, can you check that? But this one. And when it said no red card, everyone in the stadium went, phew, thank for that.
Yeah. I think I've said it so many times, but I don't want to go into too much of a rant, but...
Go for a rant.
There's so much... So many better ways to look at how that sort of technology is used from other sports. I'm thinking specifically American football and cricket, in terms of how they use it and how it's presented to the audience inside.
Stop-start games again, though, isn't it?
Yeah. It's just how it's the presentation to the people inside the ground is half
the issue. Do they get the feeling that if people can see the action and... you know, you get a disagreement of opinion, that people are going to start rioting or something like that? I mean, are we not to be trusted with actually not having a replay of what's going on?
It's football supporters in general. I mean, basically, it's the same. You go to a rugby match or a cricket match, you're very welcome to drink and watch the game.
But we're dirt.
I was talking to someone this week about the Amex, actually, and basically his one experience of it was going to the Rugby World Cup.
Okay.
And you know, the stadium was the whole concourse outside. It was alive, it was vibrant, everyone was happy. And the way it was actually used that day was absolutely wonderful. But because of the laws governing football are very different, it's the same with VAR. They suspect, like you said, they probably suspect there's going to be a riot, and they are so wrong.
Well, of course. Yeah.
But let's just leave it there and move on to Alex Tetti trying to out Hawkins.
That would have been own goal of the season. And Krull was beaten all ends up.
Yeah. Quick word for Tim Krull. Nice to see him back. Nice to see him doing well.
No. And every time I had a chance, the few times I had a chance to interview him when I was working for Juice, always one of the nicer, you know, all players are nice, but he's always a great guy to chat to.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, let's move on then. Second half, Trossard did come on for Pascal Gross, who Huffman Puff didn't really do an awful lot. But
The thing is, when Pascal Gross is running into the wind, then he looks like he's probably going in reverse. He's that slow.
Mm. But he did open the scoring, and it was a wonderful finish, ghosting in at the far post. And it was.
And for me, this is where statisticians actually drive me up the wall, round the twist, up the bend, wherever it is they're going. Martin Montoya gets into the Premier League Team of the Week for an assist. Martin Montoya at the moment needs to buck his ideas up. But, you know, I'm not going to criticise an Albion player or actually sort of want to hound him out of the club. But he... Anyway, Trossard, yes. As toe pokes go, it was absolutely magic.
Well, it was two toe pokes, actually, because it was his free kick that he put in for... the wonderful finish, textbook finish from Shane Duffy. Actually, it wasn't a textbook. He didn't use his head, did he?
Well, I was going to say, even at that height, still should have used his head. And the Times reported that he did.
But it was absolutely wonderful. I mean, it was, you know, 2-0. We created,
were you expecting an offside flag, though? Bradley, were you expecting an offside flag?
From my viewpoint, yes. Just from how the way he shot off, it was just the immediate first thought was... Surely he had to be offside from that.
Well, Duffy wasn't offside. We thought it was proper, and when the ball was played, he was offside, but he wasn't interfering, so he moved backwards. But it's one of those. But I mean, it's 2-0.
At the end, it kind of flattered Norwich. I think that scoreline.
Yeah, I mean, Norwich were rubbish, basically.
They weren't good. They offered nothing in the second half, and but for our poor finishing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Well, we've got to move on because we've got a couple of other bits to get through. Just a quick notice board for you. Thanks everyone who entered our taxi competition.
That was
absolutely
good fun.
Wonderful. Record entries actually. It was quite overwhelming. So it was
basically
amazing.
We've got a lot more people disappointed than happy.
But, than we've ever had before.
Absolutely.
But congratulations to the winners, who were Lee Witham and Nathan Berry. Hopefully you should have had your games by now.
Yeah,
and
let us know how you get on.
And hope you enjoy them.
And have you fallen out with your families yet playing the game? So, no, we'll reiterate. It's a great game. I think it's on sale in the club shop. It is a really good one, especially if you're going to sit and have it in the pub or you know, make sure you make... It's brilliant. It's loved it. Absolutely, yes.
Next weekend, the Albion women are in action. They are at the Amex against Birmingham City. And Al, you caught up with Hope Powell and Fliss Gibbons earlier today.
Look at it. You're going to play here again. Second game.
Yeah.
Emotions ahead of next Sunday.
Yeah, it's great. It's great for the girls that we get the opportunity again to play here. Nice experience. Great stadium. So we feel very privileged and humbled. It'd be really great if we had a really good turnout from the supporters, so that, you know, they can lift us and we can try and emulate the performance we had last week against Arsenal.
The club worked hard on that, haven't they? They've ticket prices reduced and quite a lot of, sort of marketing for this.
Yes. You know, it's an ambition of the club to, you know, get more. Increase the fan base for the women's game, exceed all the expectations, make this club worthy of you know, the fans coming and watching the game. So yeah, it's a really good effort by everybody, and as I said, a real privilege to play here.
As a game, it's probably a key game. Birmingham sort of down around there as well.
Yeah. I think they're all key games. We said it at the beginning of the season. This season is probably going to be harder than last season. I think you go once, you know, the first season, it takes a lot out of you. Then you have to recharge and do it all again. The teams that come into the league, better, bigger clubs, if you like. The league, in terms of players, getting tougher and tougher. So every game we play is crucial and it's tough. So it will be the same for Birmingham. They'll want to pick up the points. We want to pick up the points. So we'll have to be at our best, you know, to ensure that we get something out of the game.
Home advantage and being here at the Amex, will that be a double advantage?
I hope so. You know, I think really important that we get the spectators in to really boost the girls. That would be really, really helpful. So I'm urging everybody to come along and support them. And then, you know, the girls really have to showcase themselves and put their best foot forward and really go for it and try and win the game.
But the stadium might inspire Birmingham too, I guess.
Absolutely. And why wouldn't it? It's a great stadium. I think the fact that the club are doing this so that we can play a game here. It's fantastic. We'll enjoy it and they'll enjoy it. Let's hope for a good game.
Hey, for some of the newer players, this will be the first time they've played in front of at the Amex.
Yeah.
How special will that be for them?
I'm sure you'll probably have to ask them. Yeah. Of course, it will be special if they've never played here before. I think the nice thing is that, you know, we're not the only club doing it. You know, we played Bristol in their stadium, so that feel of a stadium shouldn't be too nerve-wracking, hopefully. But it's the expectation around the game. They'll have to enjoy it. It is just another bit of grass, to be fair. It's a grass pitch, 2 goals, 22 players. So let's focus on that rather than, you know, getting overruled by the stadium, the Amex, which is fantastic, but it is about the football on the day.
And there'll certainly be some confidence going in as well, given the Arsenal result as
well. Yes, I hope so. I think it really showed... you know, what the girls are about. We changed some things last week leading into that game, and hopefully we can carry it through to the Birmingham game.
And especially to shut out a good Arsenal side as well.
Yes, and it was quite a compliment. I thought that they then, with the last 15 minutes, really went for the win and brought on 3 big guns, Miedemar, Van der Donk and Evans, I think it was, and really went for the game, and we were very resilient. We were steadfast. We created some good chances. We actually scored. Yeah. I'd question whether it was offside, but the fact that we scored and we created chances really encouraging. And then to go into the penalties and execute that in the way we did, I'm really pleased. And more importantly, they will have, you know, got some confidence from that.
Okay. At the beginning of the season, you said you wanted to see improvements in sort of so many areas on the pitch. Mm-hmm. Here we are sort of partway into the season. How do you think those improvements have been taken out onto the pitch?
Generally, yes. I think we have to respect that the standard of the league has gone up a notch. But certainly, you know, the goalkeeping area was one of those areas, and we recruited well in Megan Walsh. Game understanding better, how we're trying to play a bit better. I think what we're lacking and where we're lacking is sort of the final third and scoring goals. And probably, you know, not keeping goals out of our net is a little bit of a concern. But in terms of what we're trying to achieve and the work we're doing and how the girls have played and their application to it, I can't fault it.
Last week we interviewed Tony Bloom, and obviously he was talking about the new deal that the sponsorship that American Express have undertaken with the Albion, especially their support for the women's game and the ring fence money. How is that going to affect you on a day-to-day basis?
The club have been fantastic. I think that the changes that have been made, the in terms of the support staff, the infrastructure, the new build, I think the club have been fantastic, really invested a lot of money to make sure that the women's game at this club is sustainable. So we're in a building phase, if you like. The club are supportive, the board are supportive. Give us everything we want, really, and then some. So I have no complaints. I think the club are true to their word. They value the women's game. I think it's quite evident. I think that anybody that works in this environment will recognise that it's a nice club to be at. So for us, you know, Tony Bloom has been fantastic. We've now got to repay that by good results on the pitch.
And one last question from me. You mentioned about you're querying an offside, the big sort of bugbear of a lot of men's football, certainly. Would you like to see VAR introduced into the women's game?
Well, it has been, hasn't it, at the World Cup. So there's a lot of controversy around it. You know, still human beings at the other end of it make the decision around it. You know, the fact that a lot of women's teams don't have their own stadia, that might be a bit challenging at the moment. As the game develops and it grows, as it is doing quite rapidly, who knows, that might come into play. But you never know, within the men's game, they might take it away because there's a lot of controversy around it. So, yeah, we'll have to wait and see.
90,000 at Wembley for the England International. Mm-hmm. The weekend you play in Birmingham is being branded... Yeah, it's Women's Football Weekend, you're playing at the home of the men's team. Have you known a better time for women's football?
No, not in terms of the airtime that it's getting. The fact that more of the games, certainly the women's game, are being played in men's stadia, the reporting around it, the faces of the girls are known. I mean, the support that's been galvanised, 90,000, if they show up, and please God they will, weather pending, I'm sure. So at the moment, it's got great momentum, not just in this country, by the way. I think it's a global movement. And I think, you know, it hopefully it will continue and it will be sustainable over a long, long, long period of time.
Yeah, no, we're really looking forward to it. Obviously, we played here at the end of last season. It was a really great occasion. Unfortunately, the result didn't go our way, but we'll be looking to build on that and hopefully get a win here in front of the fans.
How different is it to Crawley or anywhere else?
Yeah, I think obviously the stadium is very different. It's amazing walking out here in obviously such a lovely stadium, and we feel very, very valued and very honoured to be able to do that. But I think our approach to the game doesn't actually change. You know, we make sure that we approach in the same way. We do all the same preparation beforehand. So once we're on that pitch, really nothing changes.
So can it be awe-inspiring? Could it be a negative, or is it purely a positive?
No, I think it is purely a positive. Obviously, there's going to be nerves, but I think that there's nerves in every game. But I think, you know, it's very exciting. I know a lot of the girls have got a lot of friends and family come in, perhaps even for the first time to see them. So it's going to be a really special occasion for a lot of us, and one we're really looking forward to.
Does the size of the crowd dictate the atmosphere to some degree? I know that sounds like an obvious question, but obviously the Arsenal game last season, they were about to be crowned champions.
Yeah.
But will that make a difference?
Yeah, I think so. I think if we can get good numbers here, the atmosphere definitely makes a difference. You know, we had 5,000 here before, and you can really tell. Obviously, we couldn't fill the stadium, but yeah, it did make a difference. I think we've got a lot better numbers even at Crawley Stadium this season, so we're hoping that we can improve on that 5,000 mark, and hopefully that we can make it a bit of a fortress on Sunday.
And a cheeky one for me, the 2 goals in 5 in the Women's Super League.
Yeah.
You've had a hatful in your time when you've played up front. Have you had a quiet word in the bosses here? There's no chance you may go up front?
No, that was a long time ago now, really. I did play a more attacking role, and when I sort of before Hope came, you know, I played higher up the pitch. But she's come in and said that, you know, she sees me more defensively, and I'm enjoying the role, and you know, I'm starting games as well, and I think I'm improving every week. So yeah, no, I've taken that on board. Obviously, Hope's knowledge of the game speaks for itself. So when she said to me, "I think you're a left back," I said, "Okay then." I said, "Let's go."
Yes, boss.
Yeah, I said that's fine. But I'm playing, and that's what's most important.
Fliss, for some of the squad, it'd be their first time playing here. Mm. Is there anything you sort of give them, any advice or anything, for someone who's played here before?
Yeah, I think just to enjoy it, just to enjoy the occasion. I think definitely we probably came off after the Arsenal game. You know, it was a really special occasion, but ultimately we were disappointed because of how we performed. So I think it's just going to be a sort of go out there and no regrets, you know, leave everything on the pitch and enjoy it, you know, take in the moment, because you don't know how many times this is going to happen. So yeah, definitely just enjoy the moment.
And you'll be full of confidence going into this game, given the Arsenal result as well in the previous game.
Yeah, definitely. It was a great result, and more importantly, it was a great performance from us. And you know, we'd come off the back of a couple of defeats in the Super League, which we were disappointed with our performances. They were, you know, by our standards, below par really. So to go into that Arsenal game and perform the way we did, and stick to our game plan and stay as disciplined as we did. Yeah, we were really pleased with, so we'll definitely go into this game knowing that we do belong in this league, and we can compete with every team.
Mm. And it'll be a big game as well, because Birmingham are in and around you as well, so it'll be a sort of tough game for both of you in that sense.
Yeah, I think it'll be a very competitive game. Like you said, they're in and around us. They're the sort of team that we'd look at and like to think that we could compete with and ultimately take points off. So, yeah, they've come off the back of some good results in the league. So they're gonna be confident coming here as well. But like I said before, we're just gonna approach it the same as we do every game. We'll do our homework. We'll do our work on the training pitch beforehand, and then ultimately come out here and hope that we can finish the job.
Okay, at the beginning of the season, Hope Powell, she said she expected improvements in just about every area from last season to this. So with that in mind, what did she specifically ask of you, and how do you think that you've responded to her calls?
Yeah, I think higher standards and expectations, ultimately. You know, she expects more from us as footballers and as people. That's sort of on and off the pitch. So, yeah, she has higher standards for us, and we have higher standards for ourselves. You know, I think training has been a lot better. We've made some good signings, some new recruits that have settled in really well. They're good players and they're good people, so we've got a good team spirit at the moment. And I think, yeah, we want to improve on our performances and the way we play. And I think we're working hard to do that. Like I say, I think the results haven't perhaps shown that, but we start again after the game. We go into the new week, and we're hoping to put things right this weekend.
Apart from insisting that you do play at left back, what's she asked of you personally, well, professionally?
Yeah, I think she wants me to get forward a bit more this season. I think I sort of established myself defensively, and you know, I've improved on that, and I understand the role. So I think she wants me to, you know, continue to do so, do that, dominate my 1v1s, but ultimately get forward. And like you say, we're struggling for goals a little bit, so if I can contribute more in the final third, I think she'll be pleased.
And in the round, in the great scheme of things, what does it mean for Fliss Gibbons to be a Brighton Hove Albion player, a Premier League player?
Yeah, it's very, very special. I wouldn't have ever dreamed that I could have done this as a job. And I think even 3 years ago, I was working in a school and playing part-time. So, you know, it's very different. I say a lot of the time I'm living the dream, and it's true. So it's really special, and I'll have a lot of family here as well supporting me on Sunday. So it's going to be a great occasion.
And message to the community for Sunday, you want to get a big crowd. You want people perhaps to come to their first game.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think come out and support us. And I've said before, Brighton is very much a community orientated club, and we take a lot of pride in that, and, you know, bringing everyone together. And I think it's always a really nice occasion, and the support we get is always very positive. So yeah, definitely come out. We really, really appreciate it, especially if you've got young girls. You know, so many young girls come and it might be their first game, and then they want to come back every week. So yeah, bring everyone along. We're very, very grateful for the ongoing support.
It helps being in the city, doesn't it?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah, definitely. Obviously, it's closer, more accessible for people. And, you know, perhaps people that haven't been to the Amex, it's a really good opportunity to come. And there's always a very good atmosphere, you know, friendly but competitive within the crowds in the women's game. So, yeah, I think it's a nice game to come to if you've not been before.
Yeah, you heard there from the Albion vice-captain Fliss Gibbons. Before that, you heard from the Albion manager Hope Powell. Additional questions from Tim Durrans of the BBC and Adam Stenning of the Argus. So, yeah, the Albion women are playing at the Amex against Birmingham City Sunday the 17th of November. Tickets are dirt cheap, £3 each. Come along, let's see if we can, because there's so many Premier League clubs who are having their women play at their main stadium, and it's brilliant, all supporting the women's weekend, where there's no men's games. So come along to the Amex. It'll be absolutely brilliant.
OK. Bradley, so Man United this weekend, you confident?
I mean, my Albion mojo is on high after our recent results, but I'm still a bit of a pessimist at heart, so it's...
So a 5-0 win then.
Oh, yeah. It's on a bit of a knife edge, this one, but yeah, you know what? Why not?
The highest we've ever been in the top flight is fifth.
Yep, I think this absolutely represents an absolutely perfect chance for us to see how far, now that we've actually got ourselves in a better place, how far Graham Potter's team can play. And I think Manchester United at their place, I think, is an excellent test for us.
Okay, I will leave it there. That's all we've got time for. So, of course, thank you to Bradley Stratton. Thank you to Alan Ware. Thank you to Andy Ritchie. Thank you to Hope Powell and Fliss Gibbons. I'm Ady Packham, and we will see you all again next week. Thanks for listening. Bye. We'll